The Rams are odds on now at minus 105 to win the NFC West. I understand their status as the favorite. We do our training camp team previews and our training camp tour on Money Moves, and we did Seattle, and I brought up, like, hey, week 11 on for Sam Darnold, he was average to below average. He was not particularly great. And now Kubiak's gone, not there to save his bacon. But this is still a pretty well-rounded team with one of the best special teams units in the NFL. I don't know, man. Over 2-1 with this Rams movement, that seems like something I think is worth investing in. They shouldn't be over 2-1 to win that division, do you think?
This is Pod to the Futures with Mitch Moss and Jonathan Von Tobel on VSiN, the sports betting network.
What's up, folks? Welcome in. It's Mitch Moss. It's Jonathan Von Tobel. It's another episode of Pod to the Futures. We got a good one on tap for you today. Football is back. I am so excited. I would say that Mitch is as well. I will speak for him in this very instance, because who isn't excited about the return of college football, NFL right around the corner? And that's where we're going to begin the podcast today, because we got some big news in the National Football League. Largely expected, but officially official now at this point. Aaron Donald signs a one-year deal to rejoin the Rams after 2 years out of the league. It's going to be worth about $20 million. Total value of the deal can be worth $30, depending on what's going to happen here. And Mitch, not a surprise, the Rams, who are your favorite to win the whole shebang, become a little bit shorter depending where you look. DraftKings, 5-1 to win the Super Bowl. Bills are at 10-1, as are the Baltimore Ravens. So let's start with the big picture, and we get to some of the awards and all the other ramifications, if you will, of this return. Is 5-1 too short for now the Rams to win the Super Bowl?
Do you think history plays into this at all?
Whatever could you mean, Mitch?
I mean, it gives you a pretty good perspective, right? Of the best team doesn't always win the title. It doesn't matter what sport you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So when you go back and look at teams that have been 5-1 or better to win the Super Bowl, 0-20.
I didn't know it was 0-20. That's ridiculous.
You didn't see the tweet?
No, I knew the Stormy gave me some stat about, like, you know, some odds, and like it was like 2 out of the last something. So I knew it was a very low probability. I did not see 0-20 tied to that number.
Okay. Well, let me, I'll get the exact thing here, but we've had this several times. Can you remember back? I have to say that because you brag about, like, not watching movies from the 90s or whatever. Yeah. It is your stick is turned into. But do you remember, like, the Eagles from 2003, 2004?
Kind of.
They were calling themselves a dream team. I think that was, like, the
2003 and 4. Was that, yeah, that, like, was not that long ago, was it? That, I think, yeah, you're talking about 2013 and 2014?
No, I think there was a year when, I got to go, yeah, back and check the dates.
You're talking about the year that Vince Young joined them. He was their backup quarterback. He called them a dream team.
Man, Philadelphia in 2004, they were 5-1 to win the whole thing.
Oh, really? Okay, I know Vince Young, when he was on the team, called them the dream team, and then they flamed out. But I knew that, yes, I knew those teams were good. Obviously, one of them lost to Tom Brady in the Super Bowl. That was part of the stretch where Andy Reid made it to, like, what, like 5 NFC Championship, yeah, games, whatever it was. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So they put together a great team on paper in the offseason, and I think it was Nnamdi Asamoah, former Raider, who said it was the dream team back then, and they completely flopped and they failed. And we've seen this in the NBA before as well. But, I mean, you go back. This is Ben Fowkes with the tweet. Over the last 30 years, the preseason favorite has had Super Bowl odds of 5-1 or better 20 different times. Mm-hmm. They have never won the title.
Wow.
Three times recently with the Chiefs. So the Chiefs have 3 titles. But whenever they were 5-1 or higher, meaning, you know, better chance to win, 2024, 2021, 2020, they did not win the Super Bowl. 2019 Patriots. 2017, the Patriots were plus 275 to win the Super Bowl.
Wow.
How do we allow a team to get that low? Like, that's completely unbettable. I don't care how good the offseason is or who they have on the roster. So yep. I guess if history means anything, 5-1, can't bet it. I wouldn't bet it anyway.
Yeah. By the way, Nnamdi Asamoah's rookie season was 2003, so I think you're conflating two different Eagles teams. He joined Philly in 2011. The point still stands, because I think it was the Vince Young Philadelphia team that I'm talking about. They called themselves a dream team. But I'm with you in that. Look, 5-1 or shorter, it's hard to invest in that. You have a lot of people that are throwing around undefeated with this team now that Aaron Donald is there. And I wanted to say this. It's been 2 years. Aaron Donald was obviously very awesome. It's been 2 years. You have no idea. He even said it. We played a clip of him on the show today. He's got to get in football shape. He's in shape. You got to get in football shape. And I think a lot of people are just are assuming, look, he played over 1,000 snaps just once in his final 4 years, I think it was. It was three out of the last four. He played fewer than 1,000 snaps. I think people are thinking he's just like hitting the ground and playing like 900-plus snaps. And like, I don't think that's the case. I think, Mitch, they're going to slow roll him. I think if you're – he is a luxury. He is the cherry on top. He is the sprinkles. He is whatever you want to call it. And I think that they are going to use him as such and make sure that he is – as close to what he used to be by the time the postseason comes around. And I think that's what matters to them. And if they're smart, I think that is. I don't think they're just going to press the gas the second they come out and ask him to play every single down. But the market's pricing it like that. People are expecting that to be the case. And I just don't think that is so. And here's the thing, and I invoked Survivor from last year about the undefeated season because that's being thrown out there. I got eliminated in Survivor because this Rams team, which had outgained the San Francisco 49ers, had a net like plus 3.2 yards per play, was in the red zone five different times, still lost that game. It is hard to win an NFL football game. It's hard to win an NFL game when you actually have the statistical advantage in the lone contest itself, let alone being able to get on the right side of 17 of these bad boys plus the postseason. I don't want to hear anything about the undefeated season. I think they're in the range of like 50-1 to do so. I would need a little bit more. It's going to be insane to be able to pull that off, especially when you play the Seahawks twice. The 49ers, you know, they're a plucky group twice. The schedule, it's insane, and they travel.
Sure. I mean, they're going to show up to Melbourne 24 hours before they play the 49ers.
Yep.
Now, maybe they win this game 37-3 and they look like the best team of all time. What if they get beat in that game? Mm-hmm. Right? I don't really love this 49ers team this year, but that's neither here nor there. And then, JVT, this is not like a team going to London that we've had so many times now over the last 15 years. These are two teams going to Melbourne, Australia that we're talking about here. How do we know? Now, I get it. When they come back, they don't have to play the next week until Monday night against the Giants. But how do we know that that travel lag is not going to affect the players and getting used to the new time zone again coming back to the West Coast won't impact them for a little while? Because when they go to the Giants on Monday night, by the way, do you know what's after that? A short week, and then they go to Denver to play Sunday night, and then they go and play across the country at Philadelphia, and then they come back home for the Bills on Monday night. Like, that stretch for the Rams is very difficult. I mean, I would not be surprised if they lost two or three of the first five games to begin the year.
Yep. I'm completely in agreement. So I think undefeated's out the window. So let's talk about some other, I think, ripple effects. We'll focus on the Rams first because there's other aspects of this that I think we should talk about. Let's talk about individuals. Aaron Donald himself, comeback player of the year, in the range of plus 750 at some spots to win this thing. Defensive player of the year, 50-1. So let's start with Donald himself. Can he win any sort of award this year? We'll start with comeback player of the year.
Well, I mean, I erupted on this today on Follow the Money, and the VSiN Twitter account sent out that clip. It's got a pretty big response, and a lot of it is basically saying, actually, you're wrong. You sound like an idiot with this. They didn't go that far. They were actually somewhat civil. But he is eligible, according to the action, because I said that I basically said that when voters, and some of them did vote for Sam Darnold to win comeback player of the year a couple of years ago, not last year with the Seahawks, but the year before with the Vikings. That's because he was coming back from sucking as a player in the NFL. Geno Smith won the award a couple of years ago because of that, and Joe Flacco won it the year after that because he was on his couch until like week 13 and he came back for the Browns. That's when they put in the new fine print for the rule. And then Sam Darnold, if ever a guy came back from sucking, it was Sam Darnold. Never even came close to winning the award. Again, got some first place votes, but for the most part, those voters who are pretty much the same every single year elected to go somewhere else. So if they did not vote for Sam Darnold 2 years ago based on the new fine print, how in the hell can those same people turn around 2 years later and say, yeah, I think Aaron Donald's going to be my guy to win the award? Technically, again, he's eligible, but I think you just have to. Paulie had a good point today. 29 of the other 30 people in that market to win comeback player of the year around him, either ahead of him or behind him, are all coming back from injury.
Yep. Sorry, I had to sneeze. I thought it was going to happen. Okay, here's the point. You are right and you are wrong in a sense. You are wrong in the sense of, as you already hit on, yes, he's like eligible to win it, right? Like he'll be able to accrue votes. Phillip Rivers got a vote from one person last year. Where you're right and where all these people are wrong, and they're being obtuse, and I think it's almost purposely so when they're trying to do this to you. And I saw somebody mention, he's like, well, Phillip Rivers got a vote. Yeah, he got a vote. Your point is that the AP has made these clarifications and that the voters have stuck to those rules for the most part. You've had the few voters the last couple of years that maybe have gone rogue a little bit. But comeback player of the year voting last year, McCaffrey was a runaway with 31 first place votes, Aiden Hutchinson with 9, Dak Prescott with 6, Trevor Lawrence with 2, and then Chris Olave and then Phillip Rivers each got 1 first place vote. So again, we're talking about a very, very small amount of people that are actually looking at that and saying, no, screw the rules. I'm going to vote for it how I want. The year that you're referring to is Sam Darnold. Joe Burrow got 31 first place votes. Sam Darnold only got 7. He didn't even come close to winning comeback player of the year. So again, voters showing us that they are willing to listen to these guidelines. Now, I think the guidelines are stupid in the sense of in the fine print they put in other circumstances, which could mean anything, but they're focusing on the hardship aspect of it. Aaron Donald is not coming back from any hardship. Aaron Donald is coming back from something of his own choosing, which is retirement after 2 years. He is not going to win this award. So I agree with your line of thinking. And I saw a lot of this, which is like, well, then why is it up in the first place? Because they know people like you will vote for it. Will bet on it, right? Like, and I don't mean like, you know, Mitch, but like just the general you. They know people will put bets on it, even though the last 2 years have told us these voters are taking these new guidelines somewhat seriously. So that's why it's up. You don't have to bet it. And in fact, as Paulie pointed out, as Mitch has pointed out, his presence in these odds then tells us that there's some value to be found elsewhere when we have all of these guys that are coming back from actual injuries. Mm-hmm. So I think the question is, you know, much like the Rams too, which we can tie in the big picture, you know, if the Rams are too short and Aaron Donald's too short to win comeback player of the year, where else do you look if we're talking about him not being priced accurately? And I think there's quite a few other places that you can look here depending on what you're thinking about, right? Mahomes, obviously a plus 185 is the favorite for a reason. I still ask the question, and I'll ask you, I asked this to Stormy, how, like, is it the magnitude of the injury? He only missed, what, the last 2 games? Last 3 games, whatever it was, Mahomes? Like, he didn't miss that much time. I think it was maybe last 4.
He got hurt in December, right?
Yeah. So it, maybe it's just the magnitude of the injury and coming back from it. But if that's the case, then Daniel Jones should be up there because Daniel Jones is at 14-1. He freaking tore his Achilles on the anniversary of Pearl Harbor, and my man's going to start week 1 in the of the regular season. So I do wonder if Mahomes is mispriced, if Donald's presence makes this mispriced, and we should be looking at some other places here on this awards list for sure.
You know, prediction markets, by the way, I'll throw out Kelce right now. You can bet the no, it's 92 cents on Donald to win.
Yeah.
I think maybe that's something I don't want to do right now, but as the season progresses and if he like is around that number, maybe we can dive into this like in November or December.
Yeah. Well, I mean, as you pointed out too, you can make your own, correct? So you can offer.
You can
do what you said and just go out there and just throw out the...
In theory, I should be able to become a market maker on Kelce and offer the entire world 20-1, a better number than you're going to find anywhere on Aaron Donald. And never move the number and just take bets the entire season.
Yep.
And I should be able to clean up. And in fact, I would say one more thing. If voters actually do give it to him, then just cease having the award in general, if you're the NFL, which they won't do. But then I would tell sportsbooks, just take it off the board. Don't even offer it anymore. Stupid.
Yeah. Oh, no. Yeah. This is, there's no way in hell, given what we've seen the last 2 years, that he should win this award. There's no. Like, if the voters are doing what they've done the last few years, and voters are dumb, and we talk about it all the time, but they have already set the parameter. And again, they should just call it the comeback from injury reward or whatever you want to call
it.
Like, that's
correct.
I don't understand why they keep calling it comeback, because again, when you leave language in there like comeback and then other circumstances, you do leave the door open for a voter or two to go, yeah, like, I think this is other circumstances and it's Aaron Donald.
Why did they actually write it like that?
I have no idea. I don't know why they let the other circumstances leaves the door. The day it came down, I said it on the air. I said the other circumstances, whether it's this year or next year, the other circumstances makes this thing still open. And it's why Darnold got 7 votes. And it's why Phillip Rivers got 1, because those voters are taking that language to heart. And I don't blame them, but I just don't think enough are going to do it, as clearly the masses have shown over the last couple of years.
Right. And I would actually go back to the Darnold year, 2024. Again, this is after we had two players come back from either sucking or off the couch, win it. That's when they changed the rule. When Hamlin did not win, they wanted him to win the award, and he didn't. So Joe Burrow played 10 games in 2023. He came back in 2024, had an amazing season, but it's like he wasn't coming back from a broken leg. This was not Alex Smith, and he already right. won Comeback Player of the Year previously in his career. And I remember, I think it was Mike Florio was talking about this Pro Football Talk before the season started. Evidently, Joe Burrow was like in the best shape of his career in training camp, getting ready for the 2024 season. Like it wasn't a lingering injury that we're like, oh my God, is he going to miss? He played all 17 games. In fact, that's the only, he did play 16 games a couple times back in 2021, 2022. But it's when they elected to basically say that we're taking the injured guy, even though it wasn't that serious, over the guy who was horrendous and like three teams gave up on already, that means that the fine print tells us we really shouldn't be voting for a guy like Sam Darnold. And again, he was eligible, and some people said, what do you say, seven first place votes?
Yeah.
Darnold's got to be my guy, but it was never even close to winning it that year.
Yep. So the other, I think, the ripple effects, obviously the Rams themselves, and where they're being priced. We talked about 5-1. I think, man, if you're giving me, I know how good they're potentially going to be, but you're going to give me Seattle over 2-1 to win this division? I don't know if they're that far off from this. I mean, the Rams are odds on now at minus 105 to win the NFC West. I understand their status as the favorite, but over 50%, and with the Seattle team that's largely intact outside of some, you know, Kubiak and all that, I get it. And I've even been one. We do our training camp team previews and our training camp tour on Money Moves, and we did Seattle, and I brought up, like, hey, week 11 on for Sam Darnold, he was average to below average. He was not particularly great. And now Kubiak's gone, not there to save his bacon. But this is still a pretty well-rounded team with one of the best special teams units in the NFL. I don't know, man. Over 2-1 with this Rams movement, that seems like something I think is worth investing in. They shouldn't be over 2-1 to win that division, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, a lot on this team here. And that would be, look, I'm going to expect JSN to come back to earth this year a little bit. It's very difficult to have back-to-back years as productive, right, as he was last year. A couple things here. Yeah, special teams, elite. Defense, one of the best in football. Like, how is the defense not going to be, right? That's going to be top five in the league yet again. And with the quarterback-coach combo here, what if Sam Darnold is the guy that we've had for the last 2 years for the most part, right? Now, he had a bunch of turnovers last year, and they got away with it. But he was also, like, pretty damn good. As he was with Minnesota the year before. And then on top of that, what if Mike McDonald is best coach in the NFL, top two, top three, and he's here for like a decade or whatever it is, and they just win a zillion games every single year and they're in contention? Is that far-fetched? I think this guy has a chance to be, and maybe he's just not talked about because he hasn't been around long enough, but what if in 3, 4, 5 years we're like, yeah, that dude's like, pretty much best coach in the NFL. Is that really that far-fetched to you?
No, not at all. I like this Seattle team. They're a competent bunch at the very least, and McDonald's going to have them ready. And at over 2-1, I think that's definitely worth looking at from a price, like just from a pure price standpoint. I think Seattle to win that division, you know, is definitely worth investing in. And, you know, football's a weird sport. It's a stupid sport. So you have no idea what this is going to be. And again, I keep focusing on the fact that I do think Aaron Donald and the Rams' big picture goals are to have him ready for the postseason,
right?
Not the regular season. Well, I don't think they don't care about him playing 60 plus snaps or whatever it is in Australia week one against the 49ers. Like,
no,
they don't care about that.
In fact, I wish we could bet on that, right? Like, how many snaps will Aaron Donald be on the field for in week one? If I put that number at 24.5, you want to go over or under that number?
Yeah, I think that's a good, I'd go under, but I think that's pretty fairly priced.
Okay.
You know,
there's also pretty good nugget here from Arash Markazi today. He joined Follow the Money in studio. And today is August 31st when we're recording this. And, you know, he's from the Sporting Tribune and he has lived and covered LA sports for a long, long time. And he's been around McVay, talked to him a bunch. And specifically, he says this over and over and over again. And he thinks this year is going to be identical. McVay wants his team to be healthy and rested for the playoffs. And he said, it is important to win the division. It will be important to beat out Seattle to win the division for them. But then when we kicked it around and like, well, how important is the one seed to go through LA? That's where the Super Bowl is at, yada, yada, yada. He said, and I specifically said, let's say it's week 16, week 17. Lions, Rams have the same record for the one seed, but they have the division wrapped up already. He just basically said, doesn't matter. He doesn't care about the one seed.
Wow.
He will not push for it. He wants all of his players to be readily available and healthy come playoff time.
I think that makes sense, man. Like, they have bigger fish to fry. It's the reason why they convinced them. It's the reason why they convinced them to come back.
Yep.
Trying to see.
And I think, Donald's also not going to, he's not the kind of guy that's going to go out there and half-ass it. I mean,
right.
I don't follow him on Instagram, but I've seen the photos when they get reposted or whatever. The dude's an absolute beast. He was never one of these guys who, you know, was put together like a complete animal during his playing days. And as soon as he retired, he just fell off the cliff, you know, and he gained like 40 pounds and has a big beer belly. I can recall seeing, I think it was recently, like photos of him like in the gym before this whole comeback tour. He's got like an 8-pack. His arms are gigantic. He looks like you with the shirt off now.
That's right.
You know, you're a beast in the gym. Pumping iron every single day. But like Donald said that he specifically watched his old routine, his workout routine, very closely so he could like dial it in again this year. And he feels, now this is like anybody could say this, right? But he feels like the drills and the overall workout that he goes through, he's better now than he was like 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And I can see that with him because he seems like he's such a, he's crazy in a good way.
Mm-hmm. Remember the old story when he was practicing with knives?
No.
You don't remember this? It turned out it was like a little bit of an overzealous like a description of it, but like he was training with like these like somewhat padded knives. And it was to train hand speed. So his trainer would like stab him with knives and he would sit there and like Keanu Reeves Matrix it and like slap the knives away.
Yeah.
I'll send you the the workout video.
That's crazy.
It's an old one. It's not like, again, it was reported as knives. Then you watch the story. They're like very much padded knives, but still, like the point still stands. The dude's kind of crazy.
Well, we can agree on this, right? They are clearly the number one power rated team in the NFL.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. I think you start to quibble with just the degree to which they're power rated, but I don't think there's any denying that they are the best team in the NFL from a power rating standpoint. You know, we can just quibble with where you put them, right? The degree of separation from them and number two, whoever you would deem number two.
Who would you have number two? Would it be Seattle?
I mean, I think Seattle is I think that's probably your best option at this point. I mean, I still don't know what I'm supposed to do with Baltimore. And I don't know what this devotion to Buffalo is in the betting market. You know what I mean? Like, I just like, again, like people always take this as I'm saying that they're going to suck. That's not the case. But to say that Buffalo is like clearly the second best team in the NFL, I don't know if I buy that. I don't know if I buy a guy who hasn't had a 1,000-yard season in three of the last 4 years coming in and saving their offense and talk about DJ Moore. And I don't buy promoting an offensive coordinator that was part of a failed regime, you know, of the last 3.5 years. So,
and oh, by the way, like kind of a run of the mill defense that's been the same forever, the way it seems, right?
That's undergoing a scheme change and has lost 2,600 snaps from a season ago. Yeah.
Yeah. Like we just think by default, because Josh Allen is Superman.
Right.
Right. That he's going to carry them to 13 wins in the one seed. And that's a team that has to prove me wrong first, or prove it to me, I should say. Right.
All right. So I have a couple of other futures angles. Anything else Rams related that you wanted to hit? Because I had a couple of futures angles I wanted to hit you with, in the NFL before we moved to college.
I think that's about it for the Rams.
Okay. So roster cut days were today. And I thought there was a transaction that was very interesting. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Did you see who their backup quarterback's going to be? Miss this?
I think I missed it.
Undrafted rookie out of Kansas, Jalen Daniels, has won the backup quarterback job for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. He is their backup quarterback. Now, I bring this up for a reason. We had quite a few teams this year, for some reason, keep four quarterbacks. right? We had a lot of them. It was kind of interesting to see and the decision what they're going to do. For those who are watching and are listening, the Browns don't count amongst them because Dylan Gabriel ended up getting put on IR. So that's a little bit of an issue, or at least to me, there's a hiccup for him, but that's why they don't count because while they did keep four, he got put on IR. So they don't have four quarterbacks on the roster. So the reason why I bring this up is the Raiders decided to keep three. They kept Fernando Mendoza, obviously, and Kirk Cousins, and they decided to keep Aiden O'Connell. Now, the Buccaneers saw enough in the preseason that they decided, you know what? We're going to trust our fate if Baker Mayfield goes down to an undrafted rookie to be our backup quarterback. That's really important. But the Raiders and Clint Kubiak were like, man, we better keep Aiden O'Connell. And I think, because we go back to the futures draft that we had, and remember one of the props that I had was Fernando Mendoza under, I think it was 2295 or something like that, the passing yards that we had. I'll have to look up the exact number for the season. I will go out on a limb, Mitch. I don't think Fernando Mendoza is seeing a second on the field this year. I think that if Kirk Cousins goes down, I think Aiden O'Connell is the primary backup for the Las Vegas Raiders. I think that Kubiak has been less than enthused with what he has seen. I think if you read some reports and listen, Adam Hill of the Las Vegas Review Journal, I know he was, I think he was on with you guys like a week or so ago. I do local radio on the side. He came on with us, had a great line, in which he said, I think Kubiak is surprised by, I'm paraphrasing, how bad this team is. They're a lot worse than they thought. And I think that when you look at the way that they have handled certain roster transactions when it comes to the quarterback position, that I don't think they want Fernando Mendoza out there at all, and they don't trust him. His current passing yards prop for the regular season, 1,950.5.
Oh, it's over under.
Huh?
You mean it's only dropped 400 yards in the last week?
Yep, but I think he could still go under. I don't think they want to play him. I think they are absolutely being truthful when you sit here and hear them say that he is not ready to go. And I think there's a reason why they kept Aiden O'Connell. People keep saying about this, well, if you cut him, then he gets second base to the practice squad, blah, blah, blah. If there was a deal for Aiden O'Connell in terms of a trade, I don't think Quinn Ewers is getting traded to the Jags. I think Aiden O'Connell is getting traded to the Jags. You know what I'm saying? Like, I think that reading between the lines, I think the Raiders desperately want to keep Aiden O'Connell because they know that if Kirk Cousins goes down, they can't turn this season over to Fernando Mendoza. Not to say that he's going to be bad. I'm just saying this year, Fernando Mendoza is not ready. And even with the adjustment of 1,950.5 passing yards, I still think it's worth looking at.
So how many books are offering this right now? I'm looking
right
at
now. I can only find it at FanDuel. I was looking everywhere. FanDuel is the only spot I could find it. So Boyd out here in Vegas.
Okay. And they have it at Boyd?
I'm going to look right now.
Okay.
But for those who don't know, Boyd and FanDuel, I don't know what the deal is, but they hang FanDuel markets here at Boyd in Vegas.
But they don't have nearly the entire menu that FanDuel offers. It's really weird. Okay, so that quote about needing three more preseason games.
Yeah.
That ties into everything here as well. And it was not pretty, obviously, for him. You're clearly not going to bet him ever to win Offensive Rookie of the Year at this stage of the game. We've been saying that now since pretty much the draft overall.
Yep. Which, by the way, where is he? He's still 7-1. I don't get this.
So you think, let's say Cousins comes up gimpy. Doesn't matter what week. I'll just throw in like week 3, week 4.
Yeah.
I'll say Mendoza finishes that game, but then you think O'Connell would be the starter the next game?
I mean, I would say that they just send in O'Connell, but yes, sure.
Right into that game. Let's not even go check out what.
I think that they have shown that. I think there were small little rumblings that there was actually consideration by Kubiak that Fernando was going to be the three and O'Connell is going to be the two. I just don't get the process of keeping Aiden O'Connell unless you knew that you were going to use him. Or at least trusted the fact that if your season goes awry at the quarterback position, if Kirk gets hurt, you'd rather turn it over to Aiden than you would Fernando. And I also think part of this too is let's be honest. I think part of this too is protecting Fernando Mendoza, right? If Kubiak truly feels that he's not ready to play, you are going to kill that kid's confidence. No matter how often he gets up there and is like, "Oh shucks, guys, you know that's just football and the love of the Lord and all this stuff," you're going to kill his confidence if you put him out there when he is not ready. We have seen quarterbacks get crushed in terms of their confidence and their careers when they have lined up behind bad offensive lines, when they have gotten out there and they have not performed well. And by the way, this is not a good offensive line.
No.
I don't think that's going to be the case at all. So I think that's part of it too, is protecting Fernando Mendoza's confidence and his ability to develop by keeping Aiden O'Connell. O'Connell's serviceable. He knows how to deal with pressure. He knows how to come in crappy situations. I think there's a reason why they're keeping him, and I think it's because they're going to use him as the backup.
Right now on Kelce, Fernando Mendoza is 28% to have 3,000 yards passing.
Get out of here.
I swear I'm looking at it right now. You can't bet the no on that. Josh Allen is at 41%.
That's crazy.
Actually, how much liquidity is in this thing?
Yeah.
If he's at 41%, that should be a bomb play.
Right. What are you looking at? That's crazy.
Yeah. It says 41%, then I pull it up, and then it says yes, 79 cents. So
okay, that makes a lot more sense. A
little weird, yep.
So I wanted to point that out. I still think his passing yard, and it, like you said, it is dropping. It is dropping a lot, his passing yards. Interestingly enough, his passing yards continue to drop, or DraftKings just took it off the board entirely, and yet he still sits there at 7-1 to win Offensive Rookie of the Year.
I know. You know what? We might actually have more books out here in Las Vegas just because it's the home team.
Yeah.
And here's another thing.
I got to check stations.
So based on what you were saying, now this all comes down, and we can change our opinion on this, obviously, because I kind of want to see it as well. But how he played in the preseason, if Cousins were to go down early with an injury, I still don't think I want to bet Mendoza to win Rookie of the Year.
No.
I really don't. The only way I would bet him at this point is if we get to week 7 and his number gets up to like 100-1 and you hear rumblings about Cousins might get benched or something like that.
Yeah.
And to get ahead of the market, and then he'll have enough runway to potentially come in. But around this current number, no way, no how should that be in the portfolio.
We should point out, too, that with positive reports about Jeremiah Love's health, he is now back up to the favorite at DraftKings to win Offensive Rookie of the Year, plus 550. Jadarian Price is at 6-1, as is Carnell Tate. Then Fernando Mendoza, 7. Dejan Stribling at 11. Jacoby Lane, 15. Mekhi Lemon, 15. And then Casey Concepcion, 18. And then you get to the 20 pluses.
What do you make overall of the players available this year for the Rookie of the Year?
For Offensive Rookie of the Year? Yep. I mean, it has been, I think this could be chaotic in terms of who wins this thing. You have a bunch of injuries and poor performances at the top, right?
Yep.
I mean, Carnell Tate has looked awful in the preseason.
Agreed.
Right? Don't know what that's going to be at all.
And by the way, there's a chance that his quarterback is no good either.
There is, right. So it's an unknown. I don't personally think that's the case, but there's certainly a probability, right, that that's going to be the case.
And no good is strong, but you know what I'm saying, where he's not the guy at this stage of his career to make sure that Carnell Tate's going to pop as a rookie.
No, I completely agree. As somebody who thinks he could be good, I completely agree. You know, Love, as we know, is injured. We'll see if he comes back week 1. That sounds like signs are pointing to that being the case. Price might be the lead back. I think that's the assumption. But is in an offensive system that last year kind of went 1-2. So we'll see if that actually...
Now, here was the news on that. Charbonnet is going to start on the pop list.
Yeah.
So he's going to miss at least 4 games. However, George Halani is a guy that I was reading about today. They're expecting to give him plenty of work.
Yep. Everybody loves him. So I don't know if that's accurate that he's there. So I think, again, like with this market, like look around, cover your eyes and throw a dart. It seems like there's a couple of guys in here that could potentially win this, or that this is going to be one of those where it's just slow start and you could find somebody a little bit later, because all of these guys could get off to slow starts given injury and or availability and whatnot.
I totally agree. I'll be honest right now. There are so many guys on like in the same range. I just have no idea which guy at this point to bet on.
Yeah.
I mean, we've gobbled up the Stribling stuff over the offseason and he's down to 11-1. Would you still bet him in double digits or no?
I think at 11-1, just given the attrition with what's going on, Mike Evans with his short shorts can't allegedly stay healthy. Continue. It feels like every day I read a report that Mike Evans has thrown his helmet in frustration because he gets dinged up or something like that. I think they need him. Like, they're the walking wounded. Pull up their depth chart. You see a bunch of red Qs and Os and IRs, and it's not good, man.
Yep. I know this is a guy.
By the way, just leads me to really quickly, I did add a couple of win totals. I think we talked about a couple of them last week, but the one of them is 49ers alt under 8.5 at plus 195.
Under 8.5?
Yeah.
Okay. You can get plus money under 9.5 too.
Yeah. I went under 8.5 at like a little bit more aggressive with some of these, you know, alternate win totals, but I was telling Stormy today, I just think there's more of a probability than not. This is, by football standards, an old team. And a lot of these guys are dealing with these injuries. And I just feel like Shanahan has done a good job navigating these rough waters, especially last year. I mean, that expires at some point, does it not?
Dude, you're preaching to the choir right now. And this, I have loved this roster, like this current window of the 49ers, sure, as much as anybody. I got to tap out on them.
Yep. And when they played a lot of football, man. Like a lot, yeah, of those guys have played a lot of football.
Sure. Now, on that note, let's say that it happens again this year where they're just missing their stars, and you know, this happened to CMC in the past. What if he misses a bunch of time, talking about the rookie of the year? His numbers come down, but Kalen Black can still be hit at 75-1 at DraftKings.
Yeah.
He looked good.
Yep.
I think a little bit in the preseason. Comes in from Indiana. Very good in college. And he would be somehow, under that scenario, would be the bell cow. I don't know. That's, again, we're talking about dart throws here.
Yep.
He'd be one guy, certainly, that would fit the bill. Omar Cooper, 65-1. He was a first-round pick.
Yeah, dude, I don't understand it at all.
And nobody talks about him. In fact, I just saw this. Omar Cooper, a first-round pick. I'm in a guillotine league, a chop league with Paul Charchian. He said that he's in one. It was a very deep league. I think it was a guillotine league. And he went undrafted.
That's crazy.
Right?
Yep.
When's the last time that happened to a first-round pick at wide receiver?
I think it's just like this Jets thing, but I mean, I keep going back to it, man. Like, Geno Smith, if in the dropbacks in which he was adequately protected last year for the Raiders, he was good. He was good. He was Seattle Geno. The problem was he was pressured on over 45% of his dropbacks. The offensive line was awful. And then, but for some reason, and he wasn't perfect, obviously, but it all fell on Geno's shoulders. And I think we get to a point where with some of these things, like I think we actually saw it over the weekend in college football. I think we get to the point where sometimes the market reflects perception. Bill Belichick and the North Carolina Tar Heels, big joke. They've got nothing going, right? Steven, he's done. He's not pulling plays. Girlfriend, Lombardi, all this stuff. And they get up to like 9.5-point dogs at one point during the week. You're like, dude, they're not that bad. And then they win the game outright.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you're seeing some of that too with some of this Jet stuff as well.
Okay. You could throw Miami in there as well because they had, everybody's talking about the roster being one of the worst rosters in like modern football. It's not going to be enough for me to go out there and bet under 3.5. I heard this about the Jets in 2017. Per his numbers, Vinny Maiulo, the great Vinny Maiulo, the Hall of Famer over at the South Point, per his numbers at that point, the Jets were the lowest rated team he's ever tracked.
Really?
They won 5 games. They went over their win total, I think, like in the first 2 months of the season.
Yeah. That seems aggressive. By the way, my team is Arizona. Like, I'm coming around on this. Like,
they're going over, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Or that's worth a bet is what I should say.
Yeah, I think so, for sure. The skill position talent's too good, I think.
Agreed.
All right, last 10 minutes. Let's transition to college football. We had a fun weekend, week zero. I mentioned one of the results. Billy B goes out there, gets it done, and gets a win for North Carolina. All right, from a future standpoint, I have made one bet after week one. I did add, we don't have to go into deep analysis on this, but I did add Jaden Maiava to win the Heisman. You can find him at 22-1. It didn't move that much. He was out there at 25-1. Wanted to see him a little bit too. He looks comfortable. The offensive line looks fine. I'm not going to rate too much from the San Jose State game, but I just wanted to see him. Didn't put the ball in danger. Ran for another touchdown. 3 total touchdowns, nearly 300 total yards. It's a good performance to add to a resume. They have a soft schedule to start. He's going to rack up some numbers, but did add Maiava to win the Heisman at 22-1. Were there any futures takeaways from week zero that you wanted to add?
Well, we got a friendship future then. He's the one guy that I have in the Heisman as of a month or so ago, 25-1.
Okay, so I have two. I have Gunnar Stockton at 20-1, and I have now Maiava at 25, and then actually I should say 3. Then I have a long shot of Jaron Chiave-Sangopulitele at 80.
Okay. Yeah. We need USC, I think, even though Jaden Daniels playing in the SEC won it on a 4-loss team a couple years ago. I think USC is going to have fewer than 4 losses for him to win.
Yes. Yeah.
On the West Coast, I know USC, they get the benefit of the doubt. They're the one team, along with Oregon, that can win on the West Coast, but I think they have to go like 10-2. And man, that is a tough schedule. Oregon, Washington at Penn State, at Wisconsin, Ohio State at Indiana. But if they go 10-2, he puts up awesome numbers, he'll be right there. I mean, he'll be going to New York, I would think, right?
And the benefit is they get them at home, or at least a couple of the big boys at home. So that'll help. They played really well at home last year, despite all of the hand-wringing over the crowds. Who cares? They've played pretty well at home over the last season and a half, so I kind of trust that they're going to be able to not run the gamut at home, but do their job when they play at home this year.
There is also this angle, too. No, I get it. Like, he was yanked in the blowout, and the backups were in. And San Jose State, to their credit, I thought looked pretty good in the second half. That was not like a fluke or, you know, anything weird about that. They just, as I said today, follow the money. It's like, that was pretty good play calling and execution and quarterback play and the whole thing. Like,
I kind of want a piece of them catching three at home against Eastern Michigan.
But that's 100%.
Yeah.
That was the discussion today as well. Like, that looks pretty juicy to me. But so there is a chance that USC is just going to have like this. It's Lincoln Riley, awesome weapons, very good offense, and yet the defense is just, it can be improved, but it can still be a weakness to the team, and they're going to be putting up a lot of points in these shootouts potentially, and that's one thing that obviously, if he's going to be playing full games, the numbers are going to be there.
Quick correction, they're on the road against Eastern Michigan, but yes, I would agree with all of that. I think the other thing that you come from this last weekend was, I kept calling it a CFP potential eliminator. UNLV loses to Memphis in a pretty rough fashion in the fourth quarter. Second half wasn't really great. They were awful on third downs. They lose their starting center, Austin Boyd, to an injury as well. Jackson Arnold looks fine, but any big takeaways? Because after this non-conference matchup, as you have pointed out, which I find hilarious, the UNLV Rebels, despite still being 0-0 in conference play, have slipped to the second choice to win the Mountain West. North Dakota State, who beat the pants off Jacksonville State, Plus 245, your favorite now. New Mexico, plus 370. By the way, New Mexico, I don't know if you saw this today, released its depth chart. Three guys listed as a potential starter. You had two oars on the depth chart for quarterback for the New Mexico Lobos. Then followed by Air Force, plus 650, so Hawaii, 7-1. But North Dakota State, new favorite to win the Mountain West after this last week.
Should they be after one game?
I mean, I guess I kind of get it, because do you want like to pile up the liability? I think a lot of people might see the two results and go, I'm betting North Dakota State, right? So maybe it's not like a true reflection of how these people think. So I would say, if you want to make them like co-favorites, it seems a little aggressive, you know.
So the team that won that game out here, Memphis, looked pretty good, man. Offense
line
overall.
Good.
Now here's the thing, right? Was how much of that is also on the UNLV defense?
It's a lot on the defense. And I'll say this, because we have our call me crazies. I know you listen every once in a while when you're coming in. I know a lot of people were riled up over that offense for Memphis at times. I got to tell you, I was in the press box for that thing, and I watched it, and I was sitting there with a former quarterback watching it as well. Stokes needs to be better. He was 15 of 26. He averaged 8.6 yards per attempt, and Mitch, he left two touchdowns on the field. they play that super wide splits where the wide receivers are almost at the sidelines. He had about four passes where he was just scuffing them in the dirt. He couldn't reach all the way out there. I know a lot of people keep focusing on a couple of those, but he burned, or I should say he, that wide receiver room, and I think it was Burnside who got him. But Mubu Benwahad is one of the corners for UNLV. He's not a great player. He got burned multiple times. In fact, he got burned for another touchdown, but Stokes underthrew it so badly that Wahad got to catch up and break it up in the end zone. I think Stokes has to be better. Some of the PFF grading actually plays that out, too. His PFF passing grade was like in the 50s. So I think he was good, but I think it was more about that defense and that defensive line, because it looked like UNLV was starting to get their groove going, and then all of a sudden that defensive line just took over, man. UNLV could not run the ball to save their life.
No, they could not. So the way it sounds, you're not going to fall for Memphis 10-1 to make the playoffs.
I know. I think they're perfectly capable. I just think it's going to be a lot harder than like 10-1 would set up. I mean, like, that game, I think they have, let me double check the schedule.
I got it right here. So in 2 weeks.
They have Navy, don't they?
Yeah, they do. And by the way, the road games are at Boise in 2 weeks.
I was going to say, and on the road against Boise in 2 weeks.
And then at Tulane later on in the year, at South Florida, at Navy. Those are the road games. Army's going to be at home. East Carolina's at home. So is UAB. So, like, if they lose the game to Boise, what has to happen in order for Memphis to still make the playoffs?
Boise has to lose. Boise can't win the Mountain West, The Pac-12, I think, for sure. Like, so right now, Memphis is in control of its own destiny to make the college football playoff. I don't think there's any doubt about it with the win over UNLV. But then you hand the torch off to Boise if you lose to them. So you have to beat them. If you lose, you need Boise State to lose. You need them to fall out of the Mountain, or God damn it, the Pac-12 race and not win that thing.
Okay, I would agree with that. What happens if Memphis beats Boise State?
Well, then I think then you're looking at October 21st as the almost near playoff eliminator on the road against Navy, right? If Navy's any good.
I would suspect that that's going to be the case also. But yep. So can they, if they beat Boise, if they lose at Navy, but Navy has two losses, are they in then? At 11-1 with wins at UNLV and at Boise State?
And we're assuming an American championship?
I think you have to assume that, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Because the question is, where does the number go based on the result of the Boise State game?
Oh, I mean, it's not going to be crazy short, but I think you're thinking like what, in the range of like 6-1, 5-1?
If they beat Boise?
Yeah.
Maybe a little bit lower?
Maybe. I mean, I think the American, like, because we always think these about these college teams, and then you watch them go play UT Martin, and you're like, oh, it's like 13-10 in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
Like, this team was just smelling its own farts for like the last 3 weeks because they think they're awesome, and they didn't show up for the Skyhawks, and all of a sudden they've got to drag themselves out of a home game in which they're massive favorites.
Yep.
You know?
Now, where does that number go if they lose at Boise?
Well, I think, what are they, 10-1 now? I think you're talking about 12 or 14, 15. Maybe 20? I don't think it would be that dramatic.
Yeah, I don't think it's worth a bet at 10-1.
Yeah, I think that's the whole point. We'll sit back and wait and see what happens, but I would just, having been at the game and watching it up close, I would caution anybody, they're a good team, but I would caution anybody that thinks that this is like a group that's going to just run the table. That Boise State game is going to be a pretty big deal for Memphis coming up here in a couple of weeks. Go ahead.
I was going to say, do you want to bet an adjusted win total for North Carolina over now?
Well, so I have a personal bet with somebody on an over on the win total. Right before the season started, they declaratively said they're not going to win a game. And I was like, please stop. Like, they're going to win a game. They're going to go over their win total. So I don't know about an adjusted win total over, but look, I keep using this word, so I'll use a different one. They're adequate, man. Like, Belichick is not a bad defensive coach. He can still get a little bit.
He is not bad.
Right. Like, he can still get a little bit out of that group. And, like, I don't know about you, but wasn't that a little reminiscent of Belichick? Remember how that used to be with Belichick versus rookie quarterbacks? Remember how he used to, like, just terrorize those guys?
Oh, yeah.
And then you see this kid come up from Harvard, and the way that I keep describing it is, I saw a lot of, oh, that used to work at Harvard, but like that guy closed that space a lot quicker than I thought. You know?
That kid was not ready for prime time.
No, and you don't want to sell too much on TCU because obviously it's pretty tough. You know, you're going to Ireland. It's your first start. Like, there's so many things. You're missing a wide receiver. All this sort of things that are happening with this program. So, like, I don't want to do too much with TCU, but I just think that, like, my premise coming into this year was that UNC was going to be like a pretty solid ATS team to start the year, because the market and everybody else was so down on them to start the season. And they forgot that last year they had close games with Cal. They were losing one score contests. Like, they were doing a bunch of these things last year. They were dragging teams down to their level and just kind of sitting on their chest and hoping that they could get some of these low scoring affairs. And they snagged a couple and they let go of the rope a little bit in the last two games. But I think they're a little bit more adequate than given credit for. And I think we should give some credit. Look, he didn't light up the world by any means, but Bobby Petrino can do some work with some guys,
sure.
And Billy Edwards is familiar with the system. And he went out there, he went 16-28 for 232 yards, 8.3 yards per attempt, zero touchdowns, but no interceptions either. Like, you'll take that from a quarterback if you have a defense that can play at a somewhat above average level, which I think they do.
Yeah, the defensive line looked really, really good. My question is, TCU, there's a chance where they don't have an impossible schedule, but they're gonna be bet against, for me anyway, in a couple of their games at least. There's a chance that they're just kind of bad this year.
I'll just say it really quickly. I know it's a non-data stuff thing. I don't know about you. I don't really love already the fight. Sonny Dykes coming out and saying like he had no idea about like anything that was going on in the locker room. The blocking of the media. Like, how about you worry about more important things?
Right.
Like keeping your roster under control and understanding what's going on in your locker room than trying to ban like the media from the locker room and doing all these sort of things and then going out to Ireland and losing that game. Like, come on now.
Yep. I mean, I will say, I mean, the North Carolina schedule, They got to go at Clemson in September. That's on the 19th. They get Notre Dame at home. They have to play Miami. They get Louisville. How good did Virginia look? They have to play at Virginia November 21st. Oh, yeah. So I'm not running out to bet an adjusted win total over with them, but it was just the people who were shoveling the dirt on the Belichick grave before that game on Saturday. I'm kind of glad that they were wrong on that.
Mm-hmm. And I got to say this too, the last point that we can get down on this, I know we're going to go a little bit over here, Wyatt. Apologize for adding a little bit of work to you, but I am curious how sustainable, and this is more of like a game-to-game thing. I know we're a futures pod, but I don't know if I want to like freak out about Virginia too much. First off, Bailey was like not great, obviously.
No.
Like, but do we? Are they really good enough, especially on defense, that you can get away with throwing 11 passes? I mean, they were 3 of 14 on third down, but they were 4 for 4 on fourth down, Virginia was. They threw 11 passes for 100 and what are we talking about? 155 yards, something like that? Yeah, and 2 touchdowns. I mean, everything went right for them. I think they're going to be a good defensive team, but I will reserve judgment, positive and negative, for Bo Pribula and the Cavaliers offense until I see him play a stiffer competition. Is that fair?
I would say so, yeah. But it's a good start, obviously, to the season. He ran the ball really well at quarterback for 110 yards. And watching a little bit of the film after the game, man, they had some really good play designs.
Oh, yeah, they
like,
did.
Like, dudes were wide open, like, all over the field. So maybe the coaching there is, like, onto something this year, you know?
Yep. Oh, I think they're a good I think legitimately they're good defensively. I just wonder how good they are on offense, and generally if we want to upgrade them too much considering how good everything went for them in that game, but we'll see.
Okay.
All right. Anything else to add before we get out of here?
We good.
All right. For everybody that's watching, listening, we appreciate a couple of minutes of your time here today. Remember to like, rate, review, subscribe, check out the updated NFL betting guide, which is out right now. And trust me, folks, I mean, look, it's September and college football just started and we're a week away from the NFL. Before you know it, we're going to be talking about the NBA guide and the college basketball guide and all these sort of things. Definitely worth a Visa Pro subscription. So go to VSiN.com/subscribe. Check that out today. And we'll talk to you next week here on Pod to the Futures.